Welcome to Enclave on Air. I'm your host today, Jax DiEugenio. In today's episode, supported by Natera, we had the pleasure of speaking with Stacey A. Cohen, MD, a physician and associate professor in the Clinical Research Division at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center, as well as an associate professor in the Division of Hematology and Oncology at the University of Washington School of Medicine in Seattle. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Cohen provided insights into the evolving role of circulating tumor DNA in clinical decision-making for patients with colorectal cancer, particularly through findings from the Circulate Japan Galaxy trial. She highlighted how ctDNA has emerged as a strong prognostic factor for recurrence risk in CRC and explored its potential to guide therapy escalation or de-escalation. She also discussed the heterogeneity in the patient population included in the Circulate Japan Galaxy study and how ctDNA negativity correlates with improved disease-free and overall survival. Additionally, Dr. Cohen outlined what data are still needed to integrate ctDNA testing into routine clinical practice and how sustained versus transient ctDNA clearance may influence treatment and surveillance strategies moving forward. What did findings from this subgroup analysis from the Circulate Japan Galaxy trial reveal about the use of ctDNA to inform adjuvant chemotherapy decisions in patients with resected CRC?
So I think it's really great that we continue to see updates from the Circulate Japan Galaxy study. You know, when it was first published and presented, there was about 1,000 patients. There's over 2,000 patients, aiming to get closer to 5,000 patients. And so it's great getting updates along the way because it's really a large, impressive data set of observational data. I think that it really helps to get strength in bigger numbers. We're seeing some different trends in how to interpret the data, but you know, this still remains an observational cohort. And so some of the issues that have been present throughout continue to be an issue in terms of how we use this data. And what I mean by that is we really need some strong prospective studies, and that's not what this study is aiming to do. But I think it really continues to offer us some great direction on maybe where the most fruitful areas of a prospective clinical trial could come. So, you know, as we review some of the updates from Galaxy, ctDNA or circulating tumor DNA continues to be a very strong prognostic risk factor, meaning that the presence of ctDNA detection is associated with much worse survival. And we're learning about how we can start to use that to help make clinical decisions. So ideally, you want to use the presence of ctDNA to suggest that someone's at higher risk for recurrence and maybe escalate therapy or give therapy when you wouldn't otherwise. Whereas someone who's ctDNA negative, you want to perhaps be able to step back and avoid the toxicity of therapy or give a less toxic therapy. So as we see updates in the Galaxy trial, we're still noticing that a variety of stages were included. All patients went to surgical resection, but where some of the heterogeneity comes up, for example, is that some of the patients had chemotherapy before surgery, perhaps most of their stage four patients, as may have been more prevalent in, and only a portion of patients received chemotherapy after surgery. So this was all done at the discretion of the clinician who was treating the patient, but again, offers some heterogeneity in the patient population. Again, we're seeing improvements in disease-free and overall survival for patients who are ctDNA negative. They show that both in the upfront time point called the MRD time point, which is done after surgery before any chemotherapy is given, and then also in the surveillance time period, which is a more longitudinal data set of looking at patients who had completed their chemotherapy and beyond. I think some interesting updates, including, you know, in the ESMO presentation and in the Nature Medicine publication, is that we continue to see that liver metastases are higher shedding sites of metastasis. And so they're more likely in a patient who had a radiographic recurrence in the liver to have positive ctDNA, whereas the lung and the peritoneum still can be detected in some patients, but may occur a little bit less often. So what you can take from that is we know that about 5% of patients who are ctDNA negative will still have recurrences. And it may be that these are related to lower volume sites of disease, or just the sites are actually in organs that don't tend to shed as much ctDNA. So I think there's, you know, continues to be some interesting updates. They show data from different molecular subgroups, again, kind of mimicking patterns that we've seen before in terms of molecular markers that are more prognostically to be better or worse. But I think really my takeaway from Galaxy is that we're continuing to learn how to treat patients by using ctDNA. None of this data is going to truly be practice changing because it's not a prospective study integrating ctDNA by which we change our management because of the ctDNA result. But I think this continues to add to the breadth of data that encourages us to continue this line of research.
How could prospective data help inform the use of ctDNA treatment decisions in clinical practice?
I'm hoping that as we have some strong prospective trials, we'll be able to start using ctDNA. So the Galaxy study is great because it asks and addresses so many different clinical situations, but what we really need is a very specific situation like stage 2 colon cancer, where we debate whether or not to give any chemotherapy, using that test to help guide that management. And then beyond that, not just using that test, but then also having a specific chemotherapy regimen. For example, when we look at the Dynamic trial out of Australia, amazing clinical trial, but it's with an assay that's not commercially available, so we can't really replicate that in our own practice necessarily. And there was also a lot of physician choice about which chemotherapy regimen to use. So we need to really hone in on a very specific question with a ctDNA trial. And if that's found to be positive, then I think from there, we can go on and start to use this in more settings. So I think more data to come, and even within the Circulate Japan cohort of studies, there will be trials that will come out soon. But I think that that's what we're lacking at this point.
How could disease management differ for a patient with sustained versus transient ctDNA clearance?
So I think the hope is that we don't just need to modify our treatment strategies, but also our surveillance strategies. So clearance implies that someone has negative ctDNA. And so the question is that a marker enough to say that perhaps they don't need as frequent of visits or lab checks or radiographic studies? At this point, we have not scaled back in any way, just thinking maybe about treatment, but not so much in terms of our surveillance. But the idea, you know, more hypothetically really could be that if someone was ctDNA negative for some number of checks and you're able to show that virtually their recurrences didn't happen outside of symptoms or, you know, rare instances, maybe you would say that the risk or the benefit of doing radiographic annual imaging is not there and you would potentially not screen them or do as much surveillance. I don't think anybody's willing to go down that pathway just yet because we really worry about every lab test having an error and the potential for that. But I think the idea of clearance to me also gets to the fact that longitudinal testing probably matters and it matters how patients respond over time. So we think that risk groups determined right after surgery matter based on the pathology, based maybe on MRD testing. But then we also need to incorporate, well, what was their response to subsequent therapy? So if they got adjuvant treatment and they cleared their ctDNA, we know that those patients do better than patients who remain ctDNA positive, and ones that briefly cleared their ctDNA do better than ones who never cleared their ctDNA. And that's the idea of transient clearance versus no clearance. However, we haven't yet said, but then what to do about it? I mean, they can make some nice survival curves, but it really doesn't help us totally answer the question of what to do next. But I think we may find that patients who are ctDNA positive or remain positive or convert back to being positive, those are the patients that we would want to have closer radiographic surveillance, whereas the ones who are negative and maybe continue to be negative, maybe those are the ones that we're going to do less intense surveillance for.
Looking at findings from the NICHE 2 trial, did it surprise you that no patients with DMMR CRC treated with neoadjuvant nivolumab plus ipilimumab experienced disease recurrence at 3 years, irrespective of whether they achieved a pathologic complete response?
I think this is a pretty exciting time to be using immunotherapy drugs in colorectal cancer. I mean, we know that this is only a subset of patients for localized colon or rectal cancer. We're really only talking about 10 to 15% of patients who are probably going to be microsatellite unstable, which is MSI or deficient mismatch repair, DMMR. But I think what we're really seeing is some very exciting data that's changing how we treat patients. We know that in rectal cancer, there have been interesting studies, notably the dostarlimab data out of Memorial Sloan Kettering, showing that we can achieve a complete response to immunotherapy alone in those patients. Now, if you look at the data, they really saw that by 6 months of therapy, and only in a few patients did they see that by 3 months of treatment. We know from other studies, for example, KEYNOTE-177, which compared immunotherapy to chemotherapy in first-line metastatic colorectal cancer, that the time to response was pretty similar, but still about 2 to 3 months. So when we think about the NICHE 2 data, these patients only received 1 month of immunotherapy, and they saw very impressive responses. All patients went to surgery, and they saw very impressive pathologic responses. So when you ask the question, well, are patients going to still do as well if they don't achieve a path CR, a pathologic complete response? My takeaway from that is we might not have waited long enough. So 4 weeks is probably insufficient to be able to convert all patients to a path CR if we look at the data in rectal cancer and in metastatic colorectal cancer. So I think probably what we're seeing is that many patients had a good response and they were just having regression of the tumor that didn't completely get to a CR, but it's really, you know, very interesting data. We also have to remember that all patients were mandated to have surgery in this trial. So the next question becomes, are we ever going to get to a point like rectal cancer where we could do non-operative management? And that's much trickier because we don't have the same abilities to do surveillance. The colonoscopy is more complicated. We don't have MRI. So I think the data from NICHE 2 is very encouraging, and it really tells us that with this type of disease-free survival, and also noting that they had high-risk patients, a lot of T4 patients, we really should be holding surgery until we know the MSI status of patients, because even though it's only that 10 to 15%, you can make dramatic improvements in outcomes, and we don't have the ability right now to give immunotherapy in the adjuvant setting, so it makes it even that much more important to recognize them early on.
Findings from NICHE 3 also showed that neoadjuvant nivolumab plus rotelimab generated PCRs in patients with dMMR colon cancer. How do you weigh these findings with the potential for non-operative management?
So NICHE 3 evaluated nivolumab and relatlimab, which is a LAG-3 inhibitor, as opposed to nivolumab and ipilimumab, which is a CTLA-4 inhibitor. And we know from melanoma that ipilimumab may be at higher toxicity, though at the current doses, it may be more similar to what we see for nivo-rela. And so we expect that their outcomes are pretty similar, though they haven't necessarily been tested head-to-head here, but potentially, you know, usually the toxicity was higher in the nivo-ipi group. I think it's very exciting to see data coming out for nivo-relatlimab. And to me, we're kind of asking multiple important questions in parallel. So first, we want to know, should we be doing immunotherapy for these patients? And I think the data is suggesting that we really should in the neoadjuvant setting. The next question would be, what's the optimal regimen? And we don't have that answer yet because NICHE 2 and NICHE 3 regimens have not been compared. And then we have, you know, the idea of toxicity and are there certain toxicities to be worried about? Prior studies have shown concern for grade 5 or deaths related to therapy with myocarditis in combination immunotherapy and even in single agent immunotherapy. So I think as we start to get excited about these drugs, we have to remember that they're still rare but very serious toxicities that can happen. Certainly, we know that patients may die of their disease or have poor outcomes, but the deaths that have been observed, I think, has really given everyone a moment of pause, though we continue to move forward. I would say, though, you know, as we're talking about, I don't know that non-operative management is here yet, and we need more trial data to show that. And that's really, again, just because the inability to do adequate surveillance. We want to make sure that if you don't do surgery, that you have really good oversight so you can catch that patient, you know, if they start to have any evidence of progression. And I think that that's complicated because a colonoscopy is not an easy ask. And patients' ability to sort of comply with those types of procedures may be less if we need to do it more often. So I think it just gives us sort of some information, I think, for planning future trials. But really my takeaway from NICHE 3 is that it remains an exciting combination to use nivolumab and relatlimab. And I look forward to sort of what the next iteration is going to be. Ideally, at some point, it'll be a head-to-head study.
Given all the ongoing research in the field and emerging data surrounding ctDNA and immunotherapy, how do you see these ultimately affecting the management of CRC in clinical practice?
So I think coming out of all of this great published data from 2024, both presented and now a lot of it published, you know, I think it's really building on two major trends. One is that we really are seeing that ctDNA is an exciting risk factor to help us understand how to treat patients. It's suggesting, you know, the presence of ctDNA suggests poor prognosis. It suggests patients that may need more aggressive therapies. But the questions really remain how to actually apply that to an individual patient. So, you know, I encourage any studies that really evaluate this because I think it's the prospective data that's preventing us from making this more standard. And then in the colon cancer world, I think that this reiterates what we've learned in rectal cancer, which is we absolutely need to know the MSI status before we take someone to surgery, because we are seeing much more impressive outcomes with neoadjuvant immunotherapy, even just 4 weeks, even patients that don't have a pathologic complete response. But that little bit of immunotherapy can go a long, long way. And we'd really love to improve our survival outcomes in this cancer. So I think the data is super exciting and you know, more room to grow, but making great progress.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive on Air, supported by Natera. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and follow our OncLive page on Instagram. If you liked today's episode of OncLive on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thank you again for listening to OncLive on Air.